Everyone, and welcome back to A Pint with Peter, an informative and somewhat comedy podcast where me and my friend Chris sit down with my dad as we try to bridge the intergenerational gap. Well, everyone, Happy New Year, the first episode of 2023.
Maybe the last.
No, I'm optimistic.
Good, good, good. Right, well, hello, good evening, welcome to Nothing Much. Name that album.
The one that was just playing.
No. That was The Children of a Revolution, which I chose very adroitly because that's going to fit in with what I'm going to talk about tonight. So here we are again. Are you two okay?
Yeah.
It's a pretty cold evening tonight. I was worried about you having a bit of Prince Harry complaint, if you know what I mean.
No.
I'll come on to it later.
I don't think I've heard him complain.
It's a little bit of a sensitive subject. I mean, as always, it's a new year. I mean, I'll try and put down a marker, you know, so when you get a vision in your head. So when the AI-powered robot excavates the time capsule in the back garden, they can give it a time and a place. Are you with me? That's the idea. So here we are. We're post-Trussonomics. She's been forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
Post-World Cup.
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah, the Premiership is back in full swing. Everywhere and everybody seems to be on strike.
Mm-hmm. They are.
Okay. Then you've got the repetitive theme of the cost of living crisis. But what always strikes me is the cost of living crisis for who? I've got a copy of a GQ magazine here. Are you familiar with GQ?
I believe I am.
Used to be a really popular magazine. I just don't understand what planet these people live on. I mean, in the same context, I often think we ain't in a crisis yet when, for example, we bought a bloody doggy advent calendar for Christmas. Do you remember?
Yes, I remember
15
seeing
quid's
it.
Worth on bloody doggy treats. You know what I'm saying? But if you go into that GQ magazine, I mean, you've got the watches, the Oyster Perpetual, the Hublot, the Breitling, and they're all a snip at, do you know how much you pay for one of those watches? Just an ordinary commonplace Breitling or Oyster? What do you think, Chris?
600?
No! Jesus, about $5,000.
Oh, okay.
About $5,000, and these are being seriously advertised. So how about being this geezer? Peter points to trendy hipster kind of guy. When you look at
points
the
points to Alex.
When you look at what he's wearing, he's got a pair of trousers, £720.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. He's wearing some rings. They're $4,000. He's wearing some sandals. The sandals cost $1,100. They're from Dolce & Gabbana. Okay. But what really interested me, because we're talking about the 70s tonight, and I've got some wonderful images there to show you, is actually this model here, he's wearing a tank top. Now, you're both looking a bit dumbfounded here. Do you even know what a tank top is?
We do. I'm just waiting to hear why it's shocking.
Yeah. Well, A, because you know what it is, and B, because people are... This is a Calvin Klein tank top, by the way. 300 quid. Yeah, along with the Calvin Klein underpants, which I think are about 150 quid. And then there's a necklace. This person, this model here is wearing a necklace. That's a mere £34,000, wouldn't you believe? Sunglasses, 400 quid. So you wonder, don't you? Because, I mean, we occasionally buy a Sunday paper, and it's supposed to be in a cost of living crisis, but it doesn't even touch the sides with some people, does it?
Well, me and Alex walked through Selfridges at Christmas, and... Not to be judgmental, a few chavs in there which got us thinking, like, were they in there to buy or just to
look? Just to nick stuff, yeah.
Or, no, they have for the guards in Selfridges, don't they?
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
So what are you saying? They were kind of spending quite lavishly.
Possibly. It's one of those things, do people buy it when they can't afford it, but just to get that image?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
We've talked about this before, haven't we?
Yes. Have we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of the fake middle class.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, don't tell anybody, but I've got a plan. I'm going to buy one of those Canada Goose logos.
Oh, no, you can't do that, Dad.
Canada Goose. You have to take this out.
No, the thing at the moment is those Prime drinks. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's like two influencers brought out an energy drink and you buy them for like £2, but people are reselling them for like £2,000.
Yeah. Bloody hell, for an energy
drink. Yeah, for an energy drink. Mm. Yeah, and what's mad, people are paying it.
Wow. I mean, that really is what tonight is about. You know, that Barnum T. Barnum, I think he was called, you know, the great American show person, talking about fooling most of the people most of the time. I mean, I think that's what a lot of pop music in particular is about. Anyway, Russ, are you crisis resistant to 10,000 feet? Are you okay? You think the show's going to go okay?
Maybe this is why I've joined a cult of cold water dipping.
You must be able to read my mind. I was going to say to you, are you okay for the dark water and the mounting pressure?
As long as I do my breath work, I'm okay.
Wow. How it is at the moment, I've told you before, I'm in my very late 60s now. I mean, I haven't known a time like it. It's really quite a pressurised time. And I can't leave tonight without mentioning Harry. Oh, God, spare us. what I'm interested in, and I think I'm on fairly safe ground here. Alex might disagree, I don't know. I mean, to me, he's the most famous prick in the known world. Preening full fat transatlantic twatology is what I do. I mean, I'm not going to buy his book.
I want to know who is, because people that love the royals hate him, and then people that hate the royals don't care about him.
Do you know, that's really interesting, because I'm a loud-mouthed booger. I mean, I've been in a couple of charity shops where I get my clothing nowadays. I've been in a couple of charity shops. On both occasions, okay, they were middle-aged. There was a couple of younger people in there. They sell books, obviously, and bits and bobs. I said, are you all going to be buying that Harry book? And Joe, every single face, it was a grimace. Yeah? There wasn't a single person in there on both occasions who was saying, you know, what a great guy, and I'm going to get the book. I reckon, give it 2 or 3 weeks, it'll be in there. It's probably 20 quid at the moment. It'll be in there for £1.50 or whatever. Why I mentioned the cold earlier, I mean, you obviously haven't got the book and haven't read it. I was thinking of you guys coming here tonight. It's quite a frosty night. Apparently, in one of the chapters, his man piece, got frostbite in the Arctic. Did you know that?
Yeah, I saw it.
You didn't know about that?
I saw
that. Yeah? And one of his fans, I think it was an aged fan, she actually made him and sent to him a cock cushion.
Aww.
Would you believe?
Very caring of her.
Well, you won't go, do you know what it's made from? You know what this cock cushion's made from? It's made from the skin of two ermine. You know, like a weasel kind of thing.
Oh, right? No, not like that.
So you've gone off it a bit now. Yeah. Right? So he's got a cock cushion made out of two animal skins. I mean, what a twat.
I thought if you got frostbite, it had to go.
No.
It's todger. Do you think he's had a todger removal? Yeah. I mean, I won't even go about him losing his virginity. I mean, that was a misstep, wasn't it? Yeah.
The quote on the BBC News website was quite funny.
What was that?
It was he lost his virginity to an older woman behind a pub in a field, and she rode him like a horse.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah. I think it was a stallion, wasn't it? The article I read.
Apparently she is a horse breeder.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. It wasn't a granny, was it? Jesus. Anyway, I mean, he's what I call a top-tier Nepo baby. Have you come across this new expression?
No.
Nepo children. It's from nepotism.
Oh, yeah.
You know how, if you can think of any examples. I mean, recently, it's quite interesting. Elvis Presley's daughter passed away. She was something like 54. But I think there's an awful lot of respect for her because she never, ever played on her old man's fame or his fortune. These Nepo children, the one I can think of is David Beckham's son. I don't suppose you watched it. I know you like these cookery programmes. David Beckham's son, they tried to set him up as a top chef. Yeah?
Yeah.
No, you're nodding your head here. He apparently had this programme where basically he made a sandwich.
Well.
You know what I mean? I think it was a bacon sandwich, something like that. I mean, do you talking about privilege, which is what we're doing here, can you think of anybody you've ever come across who is very privileged?
What, in terms of friends?
No, either, any. I mean, what I'm asking you is, being millennials, do you still think in a world of equal opportunities, do either of you think that nepotism, you know, looking after your own, giving them top jobs, do you think it's alive and well?
Definitely.
Do you really?
Yeah. It's a subject I'm actually quite fascinated in, because, you know, so many people seem to be rising stars and then you find out they've got a famous parent.
Sure, sure.
Like Lewis Capaldi was one for me. Because who's his dad again?
Peter Capaldi.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know that. And I did listen to an interview where he was making out, like, I'm sure he did. He played the pubs and stuff.
Apparently he did play the pubs and he enjoyed playing the pubs. He would go back to playing pubs if he could.
But the thing that I always think separates is he probably didn't need to get a job.
Sure.
That's what I always think separates us.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the... bands that would have been around during my era, I mean, your obvious examples are Rod Stewart's kids or Rolling Stones' kids or Paul McCartney's daughter, for example. She's a top fashion designer, isn't she? Bono from U2. I think his son actually has a band. I mean, I think if you're fortunate, it's like football. I mean, I find it quite incredible that a lot of footballers, their sons can actually play football really well, which is surprising. But I think the other side of it applies, doesn't it? I think sometimes you are very heavily burdened by the weight of your parents, aren't you? You're trying to continually catch up with them, and it's a lost cause.
Well, I'm sure when we were watching the City Southampton game, the commentators were commenting on one of the players.
Well, it's probably Haaland, wasn't it?
I'm
a massive Notts Forest fan, so I remember his old man playing for Forest.
I think they kept saying, like, oh, he's always trying to live up to his dad's records, and, like, just going on about it.
Yeah, well, I think already he's vastly exceeded his father.
Oh, really?
His father was quite a journeyman, to be quite honest. Anyway, as promised, if you go back to the last...
Oh, wait, I think Chris has something.
Peter Capaldi is actually not his father.
Oh, really?
It's his second cousin once removed.
Okay. Still.
Still family, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because if anybody my age listens to these podcasts, there was actually a really famous rock star. I think he was in the band called Traffic. I think he was called Jim Capaldi. It could be the same family. You just don't know, do you?
Then again, I think I remember reading a funny article once. It was about, like, a guy that's related to David Beckham that was making out that he's abandoned them. But it just turns out it was something like that. Second cousin twice removed. Yeah. So literally nowhere near.
Yeah, that's how it is. It's like living under the kind of aura of somebody, isn't it? It must be bloody awful. I mean, another one that springs to mind, having lived in Manchester for so long, is George Best. His son tried to make it, you know, become a celebrity and so on. He just ended up basically being something of a playboy. It's an interesting theme. Anyway, as promised, I'm going to try and give you a guided tour tonight.
Run another tour, Chris.
Yeah, Chris might think it's a moron's guide, but a moron's guide to the period 70 to 75. So think of it as a tutorial in the music, the mores, the habits, the architecture that you would have seen in that period, because it's a bloody long time ago for you guys, isn't it? I mean, for me, when you think about it, for somebody like me, the equivalent would be, I was born in the 50s. So for me, the equivalent would be the 1930s, late 1930s, which is incredibly remote. I'm hoping to get into the genres, the bands, the gigs, the cultural landscape. And again, looking at my cynical side, is it going to be plodding down the veil of ignorance? Is it going to be a dismaying exercise in rotten, forgotten nostalgia? What do you think? I do wax nostalgic, because I try to avoid that, to be quite honest.
Yeah, we don't mind.
I don't know about Alex. Say Alex's dad. She's sitting here tonight. I mean, does he, when he's in his cups, in other words, when he's had a few pints, does he sit there and go on, oh, I remember when, and...
I'll wait to see Alex's reaction, but I think he does go on about his childhood quite a bit.
Okay.
And, yeah, these teenage years yeah. and stuff.
I think what's really interesting, particularly when you're retired like I am, you do, oddly, I've got a really good memory anyway, you recall people, places and incidents from your childhood, you know, under normal working circumstances, you will have forgotten. And I was having my usual weekend chat to Andy in New Jersey. And I think he'd listened to the podcast where I talked about my moral structure, my moral template. It was largely derived from war comics. I said to him, when do you think your kind of basic character was formed? And he was really clear about it. He said, when I was 8. The person you would have met when I was 8 is fundamentally the same person you're seeing now. Yeah? And he's obviously the same age as me. I think he's younger than me. That's interesting, isn't it?
Quite interesting.
I mean, again, you could have a whole podcast on this, couldn't you? I mean, do you guys feel that your basic character is more or less... I mean, do you recognise within yourself the 9-year-old, the 10-year-old, etc.?
Oh, it's a hard one, that.
Or do you think I think, to be honest, I think the only way you can radically transform yourself is probably going to be from some kind of trauma, isn't it? I mean, I came to Manchester. Yeah, that was my trauma. That's my trauma in my early 20s. So it would have been post-India. But I was still going to gigs. I was still going to festivals. But I was living in Manchester. I wasn't going to deviate on this. I started college relatively late. Yeah. I was probably, I just told you, I was 20 plus, whereas obviously a lot of my contemporaries would have been 18, 19. So, and I'd had an awful lot of freedom, but I was telling your mother the other day, when I came to Manchester, they had halls of residence, okay, but I went into what are called digs. Do you even know what digs are?
Well, student house, really.
Yeah, I guess we use it as a terminology still.
Yeah, it's like a bed and breakfast place. Okay. It's like a bed and breakfast place. The one I went to was in Heaton Chapel. And the only reason I'm mentioning it, Julie thought I ought to mention, is you're very keen on Mrs. Bouquet, aren't you?
Oh, yes, I love Mrs. Bouquet.
So I turned up at this bloody house in Heaton Chapel and Mrs. Bouquet opened the door with that kind of strident, you know, I'm the boss here. And sure enough, she had, it's a cliche, this henpecked husband who kind of lurked in the background with his... his tank top on, his little gold-rimmed glasses. And how it worked was, there were five of us, and we all lived in this kind of top room, this kind of bunk room. And it was like a bed and breakfast gig.
That sounds quite nice, actually.
It's like bed and breakfast. So the other four guys, I got along with reasonably well, but it gradually fell to pieces. So you get up in the morning, and they're obviously saving money. So you'd have the cheapest type of cornflakes, and you could see her in the morning mixing up the milk from milk powder. It was that kind of gig. And immediately she took a slight dislike to me, although I was trying to, if you want to go straight, I'd cut my hair a bit. I was probably still quite scruffy. So I know Chris likes a fashion note here. So I would have had the classic loons, remember the loons? But I also had a very old battered flying jacket. Yeah, do you remember those flying? Well, you don't see them much now. This was a genuine Spitfire pilot's jacket. It was really bashed up. She obviously looked at me and thought, oh my God, can this guy seriously be going to college? And, what's the world coming to? And she really took to this other lad called Ian. And Ian was the classic, what nowadays would be called a bit of a swat. You know, he had a check jacket, and he had this very nice pair of specs and all that kind of stuff. And he was also what you guys would call the jock. You know what a jock is?
Yeah, sporty.
Yeah, so he played rugby, and it's all unraveled because he came back one night after probably having an evening of drinking games. He puked up all over the bedding. So,
oh, no.
So that was it. The following morning, Mrs. Bouquet went absolutely spare. And she already had it in for me. Do you know why? I'm just kind of placing things in an historical context. She had it in for me because I had the temerity to light some joss sticks.
Oh.
You with me?
Pushing it.
So something like joss sticks would have been the height of decadence. And when she came up, just to give you an idea of the kind of youth I was, this was the album that was playing. And it's your old friends, Quintessence. Yeah? Do you remember me mentioning this a long time ago? These are, remember, I've actually got pictures of them tonight. So these guys, their real name were kind of Bob and Frank and Martin. But here, as you can see, he's Shiva. This one's Raja Ram. That one's Sambu. That one's Mahadev.
Are these names for the album, or did they actually change?
No, these were kind of stage names. Yeah. And that one's called Alan.
Alan.
I think he would have been...
Good old Alan.
But as you can see, you've got the exotic joss sticks, and these guys were kind of quasi-Hindu types, you know, with all the... That's the sign on the back. So it all ended badly because Ian literally had his tail between his legs. I remember I was always a bit of a sloucher in those days. I remember slouching against the doorpost like that with my flying jacket on. And she told me to get my dirty body off the doorstep and leave immediately.
Like, were you blamed
for leading him astray? Yes, probably. I'm only telling you this because you can compare notes with what student life was like. And we were immediately turfed out, all five of us, and we ended up in a halls of residence. And I became very popular overnight in this halls of residence.
That doesn't surprise me.
Can you guess why?
Did you have a certain substance?
Substance abuse. No, I was given this medical room that had been refurbished. In other words, it had basically a bed, a sink, and a cupboard, but it was on the ground floor.
No.
The only reason I mention it is because, amazing, in the halls of... Because you guys were in halls of residence, weren't you? The halls of residence was locked up.
That's what I was going to say. Half past
11 every night.
And everyone could climb through your window.
Everyone came through my window, so, yeah.
We had a friend that did that, but got a course and got a fine, didn't he?
Really?
That was sneaking into his girlfriend's, wasn't it?
No, she was climbing into his window. It was like during the first week.
Yeah.
And then she got spiked or something. She didn't have some...
They weren't expelled.
No, wouldn't be expelled.
Yeah,
just fined. Yeah. So what? They thought he did the spiking.
No, the manager of Hall's residence had already taken a disliking to him. And then this happened, and so it was like they were arch nemesis.
You see, back in my day, I think the place was quite progressive because you did have men and women, girls and boys, but you had a girls' floor. And a boys' floor.
Some were mixed, but most I don't think we
had mixed.
Some were like one or two. No, but most were gents.
Ours was very much girls. Say on the left side was boys, the right side was girls.
Even in the noughties, you know, 30 years later, you still had some kind of segregation.
Yeah.
That's interesting. The other feature, because this is an aside, I admit it. The other feature is if you were in particular doing a course that was education related, if you had a strong accent, if you were a Geordie or if you were a Scouser, for example, you had to have compulsory elocution lessons.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I can get behind that because we've had the odd teacher that was hard to understand.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah.
So I remember being there. I'd only been there a week or two. And this girl, absolute complete stranger, stopped me. I can remember it now by the main door. Stopped me and said, "I have to tell you, it's Bath, not Bath." See, back then I would have said bath.
Yeah, bath.
I'm going for a bath.
That's what it is, it's a bath.
As if it's got an F on the end. She picked me up and said, it's bath,
oh.
Pizza. You know, you're going to have to watch that, my friend. So those are my early Manchester days. I ended up in Heaton Chapel. And how it was, I was still trying to situate myself within a subculture. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I was an Afghan coat, loon pants, cowboy boots, scarf kind of guy. So I'd look around for people who fitted in with my way of thinking. Did you find that yourself, or was that something that didn't cross your mind? You just tried to get on with anybody?
Yeah, I feel like by uni time, you just kind of got on with anyone. Yeah. Like, some things would help, yeah. You know, if you found similar interests.
Yeah, well, I think, and that's what these podcasts are about, I think a really common, clear unifier is music, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
If you like a particular style of music, you kind of amalgamate, don't you?
I think sporters as well.
Yeah. And sport, yeah, and sport.
Well, like me and my friend Anne always joke that we saw each other and thought, right, want to be his friend.
Oh, okay.
Probably because we dressed like we liked pop punk.
We dressed quite similar.
Yeah. So you probably, from that, you probably guessed, right, he likes rock music.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I mean, I had, you know, going back to, you know, the me at 8, me at 9, it would have been obviously quite different, but I've always been able to converse, meet with quite a wide variety of people. Interestingly, just to really remind you, there's a really good little programme for an old fart like me. It's inevitably on Radio 4. The guy is called Dr. Mosley, and it's only a 10-minute slot. It's life hacks. Yeah, so it might be something like doing Tai Chi, or it might be something like eating fruit, you know, dead obvious stuff. But one of them, it was on the other day, it's not news to me, is if you look at dementia, which for old people like me and your mum is potentially a problem. Apparently, 40% of dementia problems can be avoided if you have a wide social group. And it doesn't have to be people who are friends or relatives. It can be complete strangers. Isn't that interesting?
That is quite interesting.
You can avoid dementia simply by not being lonely, if you want to put it that simply. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, it's quite interesting. That.
In 3 years' time from now, you'll be coming in here and your dad will be riddled with dementia. So, you know, I was kind of double-edged. I wanted to maintain my friendship groups, but I was keen to kind of infiltrate the bastions of academe. Do you know what I mean? Because I always was quite kind of academic in my own peculiar way. I mean, I would spend quite a lot of time up in the library reading art history books and so on, and going to galleries. But I was thinking one of my main motivations was in getting a degree, it would give me a kind of entree into the working world. And my main idea at that time, I probably told you before, Barney was in Toronto. Yeah. Ollie, the other guy, he spent quite a lot of time in Toronto, and they all congregated in this place called Spadina Avenue, yeah, which is in Ontario, Canada. And what I really liked, I'm just giving you a little bit of background here. You know, when I lived in my hometown, I used to work in timber yards. And it was an interesting one. You had to kind of hide the fact of the school you'd been to, and you had to hide the fact that, you know, you had a clutch of O levels and a couple of A levels kind of thing, because, you know, if you said too much, they wouldn't give you the job because it was basically manual. So I briefly trained as a kiln operator. You know, the wood used to, you know, the wood didn't just arrive from Africa or North America or whatever. It had to be put into this kiln, stacked up, and sometimes it would be there for weeks. The other thing, I was an actual sawyer. You know the name, Sawyer. People are called like Tom Sawyer.
Oh, yeah.
I used to be a saw operative. You know, these massive saws where these enormous several tons of log go through and it cuts it up into planks. Just to, I haven't brought it down with me, just to show you what a dickhead I was and how bored I used to get. There used to be something called a bandsaw, which is like a vertical thing. You know, your dad's probably got something similar, but this would be kind of 100 times bigger. And it reminded me of that awful programme you used to watch. I mean, what I'm ashamed to tell you, but what I used to do, if I had an audience, we'd have a game, seeing how close you could get your fingers
I already know which programme he's on about.
To the moving blade. Do you know what I mean?
Jackass.
It's kind of early Jackass. It was...
I mean, to be honest, that was a high school... DT lesson.
Really? So you get a saw or whatever and see how close you could get to chopping your fingers off? Or...
Remember, I got told off once for doing it with the sander. We had like little knobs and I was like going as close as I could. Of course, not putting friction into, so I burnt the whole sand belt.
I was looking at a descriptor, you know, the 13 characteristics of somebody who's got ADHD, and that risk-taking thing is one of them. You know, you don't think about what you're doing, you just take unnecessary risks. He's looking at me very sagely here, Chris, and have I got ADHD?
Well, everyone, we are going to leave it there this week with Peter trying to self-assess me. Hope you're excited as we are to be back behind the microphone. We've got a cracking year planned for the podcast, so glad you're joining us again as we continue our journey through the past with Peter. We spoke about a mixed bag of subjects this episode, so there's got to be something in there you can join in with. What was your uni halls like? Do you think former Prince Harry is a bit of a prick as well? Or get philosophical, I've been struggling to say that, and discuss when you felt you came into your own. Join in by heading over to our Twitter and use the handle @apintwithpeter, or use our email apintwithpeter.com. I've made my resolution to get back on Twitter more, and I want you to make yours to review the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to us on. It just helps Peter get noticed. Well, everyone, can't wait to see you again next year, where we find out if the bandsaw won against Peter. So, on to the next one.